The following is a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.
Well, hi there, everybody. I'm Sean Wood, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show for Tuesday, September the 24th. On today's broadcast, we'll talk with female sprint car driver Taylor Ferns, who set another record for females on Saturday at Eldora Speedway, and John Prentice will stop by and chat with us. He's the new promoter of the King of the West and the California Civil War 360 Sprint Car Series. That's all coming up next here on the Sprint Car Show, brought to you by Rod and Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. By Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions. And by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway. Championship race teams like Donnie Schatz depend on quality parts to make it through a season. That's why they and other champions rely on rod ends from Rod End Supply.
Hi, this is Bob Douglas, and for 23 years, we have been delivering the best quality rod ends on the market, with on-time deliveries and customer service second to none. And this philosophy will continue.
To learn more about Rod End Supply, call them toll-free at 1-800-284-2902, or visit them online at rodendsupply.com. Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them.
Hi, this is Brian Monteith. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Our first guest today, well, this young lady is raising eyebrows left and right as she continues to make her mark, not only as the winningest female in the history of the United States Auto Club, she broke her own record for the highest finishing female in a Silver Crown race at Eldora on a Saturday night, part of three races at two very different racetracks that she participated in, all thanks in part to Mother Nature. We welcome in from Shelby Township, Michigan, 17-year-old female driver Taylor Ferns. Taylor, always good to talk with you, and congratulations on a fantastic weekend of both ARCA and at USAC Dirt Track Racing.
Hi, Sean. Thanks for having me, and thank you. Thank you. It was definitely a busy day, that's for sure.
You know, Mother Nature has those quirky ways about herself, and she'll throw everything at you that you can handle. But to run a mile-and-a-half super speedway and then to run the famed half-mile at Eldora, what was your day like in terms of having not only to deal with three different types of cars and two different surfaces, but all the different G-forces that you were feeling in all three cars?
Yeah, it was just definitely a crazy day, just constantly, I would say, being rushed. The ARCA race didn't start until 2 o'clock, and by the time I got off the track, my dad and I just sprinted to his truck, and when we got into his truck, it was about 3:40, and we made it to Eldora by 5:15, which I'm pretty sure is record timing to go from Sparta, Kentucky to Rossburg, Ohio. So it was definitely just a crazy day, but it was definitely it definitely really tested my athletic ability, I guess you could say, because I definitely think my dad was doubting if I could make all three races just stamina-wise, just because it was a long day. I mean, I raced 100 miles at Kentucky and then go to Eldora and race a 50-lap Silver Crown race and a 25-lap midget race. It was definitely a long day, but at the end of the day, I felt like I could do it all over again. I mean, I have an awesome trainer. I work out twice a day, and I maintain a healthy diet. So it was definitely a fun day and just totally crazy, but I wouldn't have changed it for the world. I had the time of my life.
Well, I was going to say, from knowing you, I know you are in excellent physical condition, but I do have to wonder, on Friday evening when you got washed out, what was the game plan then, knowing what you had coming ahead of you on Saturday?
Well, as soon as I found out we were going to be washed out, or rained out, I guess you could say, on Friday at Kentucky, and we're going to be racing at 2 o'clock, I think just the main thing was it was only my second time on a mile-and-a-half racetrack, and coming from the open-wheel ranks, I've grown up on short tracks. I don't really race on the larger tracks a lot, so I definitely had to learn my limits on the bigger intermediate tracks. So I think my main focus right then and there was just to have a good day at Kentucky and learn a lot. So if I am to run a full season in ARCA next year, then I'll be better prepared for racing the larger tracks, because I know I can go out and have an awesome finish on a short track, but right now I think what I just really needed to work on was the intermediate track. So I was definitely just focused on having a good race in the ARCA car, and then as soon as I would hop in my dad's truck and we started driving to Eldora, that's when I started looking up videos on YouTube from previous years and the midgets and stuff like that, because that was definitely a hard part, I think, just going from such a heavier car. And then as soon as I hopped into the midget, I was just, oh my gosh, this car is so small. Like, I just came from racing this huge stock car to now I'm racing this little midget. So I think I definitely struggled in the midget department with that. But I think I quickly adapted to the Silver Crown car, just because the Silver Crown car and the stock car I can relate to a lot.
And how much experience, that was your eighth ARCA race of the year. In terms of a mile and a half tracks for ARCA, how many mile and a half tracks had you raced on prior to Kentucky?
That was only my second one. I raced Pocono earlier, or I shouldn't say early in the season, last month in August. So that was only my second time. So that was just kind of the whole goal going into it. I want to win just as much as everybody else that's going on to the track. But sometimes when you're trying to learn things, you just got to be realistic about it and say, you know what, I know when we go on the racetrack today, we might not be able to win, but let's just come out with the highest possible finish that we can get and just learn as much as we can for next year.
And Pocono and Kentucky are two major different racetracks. You got the tricky triangle, and then you got a mile and a half, and it seemed like it was a very bumpy mile and a half Kentucky Motor Speedway.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people say about it. I guess for a pavement track for a mile and a half, it is rougher, but coming from USAC and racing on the bumpy dirt tracks, I thought it was actually kind of cool. It gave it the racetrack a lot of character, so I didn't really have a problem with it, but I guess with other people who don't race the type of cars that I am blessed to race all the time, then I guess that I could see where they're saying that it's a rough racetrack.
So you guys literally fly low under the radar, 150 miles up to Rossburg, and you come out with an 11th place finish in the midgets, and then a record-setting 4th place finish as the highest female ever to finish in that position in a Silver Crown car. So once you got out of the midget, what was it like then to jump into the much bigger and heavier Silver Crown cars and run 50 laps at that famed High Bank track?
I actually found it a lot easier trying to adapt to the Silver Crown car at Eldora. I thought one of the main reasons I wanted to run the Silver Crown car at Eldora this year, because originally 2 weeks ago I wasn't even supposed to be racing the Crown car at Eldora. It was just kind of a last-minute decision last week. My dad was like, hey, you want to go to Eldora and race the Crown car? And next year we want to race for points and get out and race all the races, because we didn't get to do it this year. So I said, yeah, it'd be a good learning thing. Why not learn this year instead of going there last year when we're racing for points and be learning the track at all the same time? So I definitely found it easier to hop in the Crown car and get used to it at Eldora easier than it was getting in the midget, just because I think I feel a lot more comfortable just driving the heavier race cars, because I've been racing a lot of heavier cars all year this year with racing the 8 stock car races, and then I ran most of the Silver Crown races. So I think I just have an easier time adapting to the heavier cars, and so that's why I think I've been kind of struggling in the midget a little bit, just because they are so light and you don't really race any other race car like a midget. So I think that's kind of why I struggled in the midget a little bit, because I always relate the Silver Crown car and the stock car together a lot.
So let me guess, Sunday was a day to sort of recoup, catch up on some rest and homework from the weekend, I take it.
Yeah, definitely. Even though I really didn't, I was just so tired, just not physically, but I was just so exhausted that I tried going to sleep as much as I could, but I just really couldn't go to sleep. Like, my adrenaline was just going and going and going. I didn't get to go to bed until 2 o'clock Sunday morning, because that's when we got to our hotel. But then I woke up at 7 o'clock in the morning and I'm like, what is going on? Why can't I sleep? So I tried getting as much homework done as I could, but today I think I'm still kind of recuperating before you actually called. I was actually getting in a quick little hour nap, so I think I'm still trying to recoup from that long day.
I'm sure the school bell at 7:45 this morning was a bit of a wake-up alarm, like, oh, man, not that loud, please, guys.
Yeah, I actually pressed news quite a few times this morning before I got up.
Let me go back to the Silver Crown for a second. You mentioned that you're looking to run that hopefully full-time next year. Now, you ran at DeCoin, but you also ran the ARCA car at DeCoin. Talk a little bit about running those two types of cars at the famed DeCoin Mile.
Well, DeCoin was definitely a lot of fun this year. As soon as we pulled in and right before we were supposed to go out for practice, we just had a huge downpour. So the track was really heavy, and actually we were hardly lifting all night. The track was just really, really fast, and we actually got to run up against the wall, which people say is very rare because normally on those mile dirt tracks like Springfield and the Indy Mile, and normally at DeCoin you're just riding around the fence. But we're actually riding against the opposite fence, sort of as a cushion, I guess you could say. So that was definitely a ton of fun in the Silver Crown car because you just had to give it all you had. But in some way, it kind of hurt me for the ARCA race the next day just because the ARCA cars, you can't throw a 3,000-pound car into the corner and expect it to stick on the cushion. So I think that's definitely where I had a learning curve the next day in the stock car. But we didn't qualify as good as we wanted to in the ARCA car, but we worked our way up to fourth, I believe, and then we had a really bad, we kind of lost a few spots when we, the last caution when we came into the pits and fell back to 16th and worked our way back up to 10th with the minimal laps that we had left. So I wouldn't say it was a bad day. I'm always really hard on myself, so I always expect more, but overall, I think we had a pretty solid weekend at DeCoin that weekend, and then we came home with fifth in the Silver Crown car, so I guess you can't be too disappointed.
I was going to say, if your personal trainer is listening to this and he hears that you can't throw a 3,000-pound stock car into a corner at DeCoin, I'm not sure I want to be around for your next workout session. Because you might say, don't. Because we can, and but you and I know the physicality of trying to throw around a 3,000-pound stock car in the dirt. It just doesn't really work.
Especially on the cushion. Like we, in the crown cars, we were literally just inches off the wall. So, I don't think that would have worked in the ARCA car, which it didn't. The next day, we were all riding against the fence. So. It was just a really fun weekend. I got to learn two different kind of driving styles, I guess you could say. So it was definitely a fun weekend.
What's on the docket then for not only the remainder of the year for the midgets, since the Silver Crown is finished and you finished eighth in the points, but what about Venturini Motorsports and ARCA? Where do those two stand at the present time?
As of right now, my last race was at Kentucky, so I'm done for the year, I guess you could say, racing the ARCA stuff. But we're really working hard on getting some sponsorship so I can race a full ARCA season next year and get some more stock car experience under my belt, because eventually that is what I want to do for a living, is make it to the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. So in order to get there, I just got to climb the ladder slowly but surely, and so hopefully that is racing in the ARCA series next year. So just as long as we get sponsorship in order to do that, then that's, I think, will be kind of one of the goals for next year, is to race a full season in ARCA. And then I was really hoping to do the full season in the Silver Crown cars, but everything racing happens at last minute. So as soon as we find out everything that is going on in the next couple months, then we'll probably have a solid plan down by mid-December.
You sure we can't change your mind and get you coming over to Indianapolis and racing for the BorgWarner Trophy?
Oh, I would love to. No matter what, I just want to race for a living. So whether it's an Indy car or NASCAR or the World of Outlaws, I just want to race. So if I can make a living doing what I love to do, then that'd be awesome. That's my dream.
Well, as intelligent as you are, I don't see you having a problem accomplishing that dream at any time in the near future, but... still an incredible weekend and incredible day for you. at just 17, running a stock car, Silver Crown, and the midget. Not too many people can say they've done that. There's a handful who have, but there's not too many who have done that. But Taylor, as always, it is indeed a pleasure to talk with you, and we wish you all the best of luck in your remaining races this year and for whatever the racing cards hold for you in 2014.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Taylor Ferns joining us. She's a member of the Bill Venturini Racing Team, finishing 12th this past weekend at Kentucky and then making the short trip up the road where she finished 11th in the USAC Midgets and 4th, the highest finishing ever position for a female in USAC history in Silver Crown. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with the new owner of the King of the West Sprint Series. That's John Prentice. That's all coming up next here on the Sprint Car Show on the Dirt Track Channel.
The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa, is the only sprint car museum in the world dedicated to promoting the future of sprint car racing and preserving the past. Located in Turn 2 of the world-famous Knoxville Raceway, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, except New Year's Day, Easter, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Non-wing sprint cars, historic big cars, open-wheel roadsters, and wing sprinters are all on display in the museum, which also features a movie theater and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Make plans now to stop by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum the next time you're in Knoxville, Iowa, or shop our museum store online at www.sprintcarstuff.com. The Hall of Fame and Museum is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday, and from noon to 5 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays and Sundays.
Hi, this is Bad Chad Layton. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Well, news broke last week. New owners and new promoters of the King of the West Tour and also the California Civil War Series. And joining us now to talk about both is the man who's running the show, John Prentice, who also promotes Ocean Speedway. John, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to talk with us, and welcome to the world of full-time promoting on a traveling basis.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
What brought about the opportunity for you to take over the King of the West Tour?
The opportunity came up, the current owner of it, Dan Simpson, he recently purchased a racetrack up in Nevada, and he wanted to focus more of his efforts and time on the racetrack, and reached out to me and asked if I'd be interested.
And being able to have a tour like this, but also have the Speedway, Ocean Speedway yourself as promoter, what made it enticing enough for you to say yes?
Well, a lot of it's the logistics. We race on Friday night. Our Ocean Speedway is a Friday night racetrack, and the King of the West series is predominantly a Saturday night race. So that definitely helps on the staffing issue. And it also fits, we're heavily into sprint car racing at Ocean Speedway. About 26 of our 33 events were sprint cars. So it fits into our program.
And if I'm not mistaken, at the Speedway, you guys have a combination of winged and non-winged sprint cars that make up those dates throughout the year. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
So what's the scene like these days? Of course, we're here in central Pennsylvania, and we have, you know, quite a bit, although we lost two very legendary sprint car drivers this year to retirement in Fred Raymer and Keith Kaufman. What is the current state of 410 winged sprint car racing, do you think, in the state of California?
I think that if you look at it as far as talent, we have a lot of young talent right now. I would say more than we've had in previous years that I can think of. I think on the talent level, we're going to have definitely in the next handful of years see a lot of talented drivers come up. Far as the economics of the sprint car racing, it's fallen off out here in California a little bit less than the curve far as the fendered cars and weekly cars. So it definitely is fallen off a little bit, not having near as many weekly racers. You're having a chasing points. You're having a lot of people that just pop in.
Do you think that's a sign of the economy still in terms of where or where it may not go in the next few years, that we have more drivers looking at doing traveling more so than running after weekly points these days?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a sign of the economy that racers just don't have the budget right now or the sponsors to race weekly. I don't see a lot of them traveling. I just see them at their local track, but instead of racing four times a month, they might be racing three times a month.
And what about the tracks in California in terms of what you have for the King of the West Tour for 410 sprint cars, for the Wings 410? Is there a lot of great distances between the tracks?
No, if you take Reno Fernley, that's the up in Nevada that Dan owns the track in the series. That was the longest distance, and I believe, I'm not mistaken, it's about a 6-hour drive from just about any other track that's on the series. If you take him out of the loop, you're probably maybe 3 to 4 hours max of driving.
Which really is not that bad, but I know you guys have one of the higher rates for gasoline prices out in the country. What are the prices like for the fuel for sprint car drivers out there?
You know, I haven't checked that recently. I want to say, yeah, I wouldn't. I'd be guessing. I'm not even quite sure what they're paying fuel-wise at the tracks.
Is that another part of the equation, do you think, as to why they may not be doing as much racing as they had in the past?
What I'm seeing is a lot of it is the sprint car racers tend to be self-employed. Self-employed, and they're having to work harder at their job in these tough economy times and take less time off work. The other part of that equation is a lot of it has to depend how much money, what do they tear up in the first part of the season. You know, if racers aren't going through parts and motors, I'm seeing them last longer than in past years where they would just replace the motor. It's now put them down for a week or two.
In the press release, it was also mentioned that coming on board is legendary 410 driver Brent Kading. What is it going to mean to have a guy like Brent working there with you and with the series?
Brent has been an absolute true asset to me getting into the promoting business, which I knew nothing about. Wasn't my background. 8 years ago, he's always been there, a phone call away. He's always supported the racetrack. He has got a couple titles and at the track and sprint cars back when we first began the series. It's definitely going to mean the difference between making the mistakes possibly two or three times to maybe just making them once.
What do you see as the challenges of being a promoter of a tour compared to the challenges that you face as a promoter of a weekly racetrack?
Well, a weekly racetrack, you're pretty much just, you know, dealing with yourself far as decision making, and on the tour, you're dealing with the other promoters that you're taking the racetrack to the series too. So you have the element of working with other promoters that you don't at your track. That's probably going to be the biggest change. You have to work with the fans and the drivers, or at least you should be at your track, your weekly track. So I don't see a difference there. I see the big difference is just more communication with the promoters that you're going to have on your schedule.
Another thing, John, that was mentioned in the press release is that you're going to have a small board of the directors that is going to be consistent of car owners and drivers. And if I read correctly, the commonality is to grow the sport of 410 winged sprint car racing in California. Can you talk a little bit about how that board is going to come together and what are some ideas that you folks may be discussing in the early days to grow the sport in California?
That's a good question. I from past business experiences, I've learned that the more diversity you can have as far as the input you're getting, the better and the better decision you're going to make, and the faster your curve will be. And so the idea behind it is sometimes you make decisions, you're not always hearing the side of the car owner or another promoter or a driver, and you make a decision that you later could regret or have to change. So this would just expedite the decision process making, allowing us to get all the input and then make a decision that's going to best fit everybody's needs. And we think in that process it's going to help grow the sport at a faster rate.
And what's one of the things that you would like to see the board do once that all comes together in terms of being able to promote the sport? What's the number one thing you think you have to address if you are going to get more drivers to come into the 410 fold, say, within the next 5 years?
I think just giving them being transparent being transparent of what promoters are doing and why the decisions they're making, I think will be very helpful for the drivers. A lot of times promoters and car owners make decisions, and it kind of leaves the drivers wondering why we made the decision. So I think transparency is going to be crucial. And I also think getting the drivers in front of the fans and keeping them out there and getting the fans involved with the drivers, I think is going to help the growth of the sport as far as getting fans involved showing up weekly to watch them.
You've also taken over operations of the California Civil War for 360 winged sprint cars. How will that be, if anything, different from running the King of the West, and how will the two coincide to the point where they're not hurting each other as the years go on?
Yeah, the theory behind it is, you know, what we do for the King of the West, we feel that at the time, you know, we're making a decision or a change that we'd probably make it a change straight across the board, and kind of keep them consistent and get both series functioning consistently far as the structure of the company or of the series. Obviously, with us having control of the schedule, it's going to take any schedule concerns we might have had before when scheduling races, because we'll be able to sit down and do a schedule and make sure that there's very few, if any, conflicts in the schedule between the two.
Do you have an idea as to how many races you would like to have on the schedule for next year for both series?
Yeah, the Civil War has consistently been at 14, 15 race dates, and that will remain the same. No more than 15, no fewer than 14. And King of the West had, I believe they had 30-plus races this year for the 410s. And in my opinion, in talking to the drivers and the track owners, that's just too many races. I don't think it worked out well for them. And I'd like to get that number back to 20 races. I think my first thought is it probably realistically needs to be somewhere between 15 and 18. I think if you're over 18, it's probably too many. If you're under 15, it's too few.
And how do you think this is going to work with the other tracks that run on Saturday nights in terms of, as you said before, the King of the West being a Saturday night type of traveling series? How do you see it working with other tracks that do run on a Saturday night? And the reason I ask that question is we see that here in the Northeast with not so much the sprint cars, but with the Northeast Dirt Modifieds, where some of the bigger tour races are happening on a Saturday night, and you get those guys who are going to stay at home and chase the points, stay at home, and you might get some of the bigger funded teams going out on the road and racing with the bigger series. What is the atmosphere like on a Saturday night for California for winged sprint car racing?
Well, it makes my job's a little bit easier out here in California as far as the 410 sprint car series goes. There's only one other weekly 410 series, and they run on a Friday night. They're about 8 hours away, and that's a Friday night track. So for our Saturday night 410 sprint cars, the King of the West is the only venue happening on a Saturday night. On the 360 side of things, we're fortunate again because when we run our weekly 360, we're Friday night, and so we don't have any competition. There's no other weekly 360 racing going on a Friday night. And Civil War, the racetracks that get race dates, one of those 15 dates, all the tracks that have dates for that year are not allowed to compete against the Civil War date at somebody else's track. So if one track has it, that means all the tracks on that schedule have to go dark for 360 racing.
And that makes sense. And that was one of the things we had back in the days of Northeast Dirt Modified. We had a tri-track series between three tracks, and when it was that track's turn to have the big event, the other two tracks went dark and everybody showed up at that one track and you had over 100 cars. But that was back in the 80s. Speaking of cars, what type of car counts do you think would be deemed successful next year on an average basis? And the second question I have is, how many tracks do you think you could fit into that 15 to 18 or even 20 category for the King of the West for next year, depending on what you end up as with a number of dates?
Good question. I see that we'll probably end up somewhere around 7, possibly 8 racetracks for King of the West in 2014. I think that's realistic. On a low side, it could be 6, but I think 7 or 8 is more realistic. And car count for King of the West, I'd be disappointed if we weren't in the neighborhood as an average around 24 cars.
And how about the 360s? Do you see about the same thing in terms of the number of tracks and or the car counts for them in next year?
Civil War Series would probably drop down to somewhere around 5, possibly 6 tracks. And I would be disappointed if we weren't averaging 40 cars. Right now, this current year, they're averaging about 34 cars. I think we should be able to push that to 40 cars our first year with a few changes that we're going to make.
Have you seen any increase in terms of more drivers coming into the 360 fold, or do you see some drivers jumping over to the 410 and having both a 410 and a 360?
I haven't seen any more than we've had in past years. I'm not seeing an influx. There's always, you definitely have more of the 410 drivers jumping into the 360s, then you have 360s jumping into 410s. You know, we definitely have 40 to 50% of the 410 guys that will jump into the Civil War or run a 360 race. And I would say it's less than a few of 360s that have 410 motors.
What do you think it would take, John, if some drivers wanted to move up from the 360s to the 410s?
Money. I really don't think it's money. I think the motor cost, what I'm hearing, is they're relatively the same. It might be the tracks. You know, I don't know. You know, if it's the tracks that they go to, maybe it's they want to stay a little closer to home, or Civil War's a little closer to home. I'm not quite sure. I don't really have that answer. I'm sure I'll have that answer relatively soon when I get to be out at the tracks and seeing these drivers and talking to them. But from what I'm hearing is cost. I'm sure tire wear is a little bit more on the 410s, and that can be a concern. As far as maintenance on motors and cost of motors, which I know is a big expense, I'm not hearing much of a difference. And far as equipment, what they tear up at night, I'm not seeing that there's a big difference between the two series.
And John, what about the dates that you have slated in terms of getting the board of directors together, a staff, keeping the website or having a new one? What kind of dates are you looking at for that, as well as hopefully your 2014 race dates for both the King of the West and the California Civil War Series?
Great question. We started immediately on staff. Staff to me is the most important element to making these two series successful. I'm a firm believer that you're only as good as your worst employee, and so I really will go after the very best staff that I can put at these two series to make sure that they're successful. So we've started immediately. We're interviewing people. We need a lot of staff, especially on the PR announcing media side of things. That's probably where we're looking the heaviest. Schedule-wise, we have our annual promoters conference up in Reno the first week of December. I would expect to leave there with a rough idea on dates and finalize and go public towards the end of December, at the very latest, the first week of January, with all three schedules.
Sounds like it's a lot of undertaking on your part. And before we do let you go, we greatly appreciate your time today. John Prentice with us, promoter Ocean Speedway and the new promoter of the King of the West Tour and the California Civil War 360 Tour. You have a little unfortunate ongoings with some local folks that haven't realized that Utopia does not want to or has ever really existed, and there are still some folks out there that would like to see the noise of a racetrack go away. Just was wondering how that is coming, and do you see a resolution in the future that would be beneficial for both parties while we can still keep dirt track racing going for those who love to go to Ocean Speedway on a regular basis?
Well, I'm optimistic. And I, you know, it's been going on just about 4 years now, is what this lawsuit's been going on, and So I pretty much live and breathe. It's kind of a series of its own. It's almost like running a racetrack, this lawsuit. I spend a good portion of my week working on it, and so I'd like to see it go away. I think that we're closer than ever before in communications with all the attorneys. Just, you know, you just, it's really hard to say. I think that there's been some unreasonable expectations put on me, and that is the pushback on my part that I think I would like to think I'm a reasonable person, and we've done a lot of reasonable efforts to make these cars quieter. I would almost venture to say that Ocean Speedway has probably, and I'm almost very certain, the quietest sprint cars in the state, if not in the country. Our sprint cars are, you know, somewhere between 86 and 88 decibels at 100 feet, and I sure don't know any that can beat that. So we'll just keep fighting the fight for the racers and the fans and all the thousands of people that enjoy this sport and come and visit the Speedway. You know, it's a part of life to a lot of people on Friday nights, and that's why I'm so passionate to fight the fight. It's probably not the best business decision I've ever made, but it's something I'm passionate about, and I'm going to fight the fight until the bitter end. So we'll just keep fighting the fight for the racers, the fans, and everybody that enjoys dirt track racing.
Well, John, we want to wish you all the best of luck, not only with the ultimate victory in the lawsuit, but also continued success at Ocean Speedway and your new venture as promoter of the King of the West Tour and the California Civil Wars. You got a lot in your plate, but sounds like you're definitely up for the task, and we wish you all the best.
Yes, thank you very much, and I will add one more thing on that lawsuit. I have to mention that this lawsuit for this four-year battle would not even be possible. But I'm married to one of the best attorneys in the county. And, so my attorney costs, I'm sure, are quite a bit less.
Like they say, behind every good racer is a strong woman, and there you go. So
thank you very much. And
Sure.
For your support, and thank you for everything you do, getting the word out to all the people that love motorsport racing. And you do a great job, and thank you so much.
Sure thing, John. Thanks very much for your time, and we will take a break and be back with more of the Sprint Car Show right after this.
The world leader in suspension technology, Penske Racing Shocks has been providing custom-built, high-performance shock absorbers to all forms of racing for over 20 years. Offering only the highest quality suspension products, shocks are available in non, single, double, triple, and four-way adjustable configurations. All Penske Racing Shocks are hand-built, tailored to meet a driver's feel or car setup, and dyno-tested, ensuring the highest attention is paid to detail, consistency, and performance. For your short track needs, contact Dave Reedy at Penske Shocks at 610-375-6180. That's 610-375-6180. Penske Racing Shocks are available direct from the manufacturer or through many dealers worldwide. Visit them on the web at www.penskeshocks.com. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions.
Special thanks to our guests, Taylor Ferns and John Prentice, for stopping by and chatting with us this week. Next weekend, it's the National Open at Williams Grove Speedway, and we'll have a number of World Outlaw drivers on our show next week. Also this weekend, it's the 13th annual National Open for the 358-360 Sprint Cars at the Sewins Grove Speedway. Be sure to check back with us here on the DirtTrackChannel.com, and we'll have post-race audio coverage for you of Saturday night's event. The Sprint Car Show has been brought to you by Rod and Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. By Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions. And by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Sean Wood.
This has been a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.